You're listening to a Hindustan Times podcast brought to you by HT Smartcast.
Welcome to season 2 of our podcast Kicks for Free, in which we discuss all things football. I am Dhiman, and with me is my co-host Vivek.
Messi!
The ninth edition of the FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off in Australia and New Zealand on Thursday. As the first edition to have 32 teams, expanded from 24, the format will be the same as what we have had in the Men's World Cup from 1998 to 2022. There are 8 groups of 4 teams each, with the top 2 from each group advancing to the round of 16. After that, we'll have the quarterfinals and semifinals before the grand finale in Sydney on August 20th. Dhiman, there are some stellar names who are in the twilight of their careers and possibly playing their last World Cup. We saw Messi have a supposedly fairy tale ending by winning the Men's World Cup with Argentina last year. That's what the likes of Megan Rapinoe, Marta, Christine Sinclair and Nono maybe will be after, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. But, they've been around long enough to know that departures don't always have a perfect ending. All the 4 that you mentioned possibly will now play part roles on the pitch. But of course, just having them around is bound to be a boost for their teams. This will be the 4th World Cup for Rapinoe, and she's won 2 of them. Sinclair, Marta, Evie, the oldest player at 40 years, 2 months and 12 days on Thursday morning, among the 736 who are part of the showpiece event, will be in their 6th, and none of them have won. So it'll have to be seen how this goes, but the fact that they're all there and the fact that their coaches have selected them means that they are convinced that they are in it to win it.
We've always taken the opportunity to show exactly who we are, not just our team, but the women's game in general. But it feels like a real opportunity to kind of like blow the lid off just in terms of fanfare and media and sponsorships and the sort of larger business around this sport. I think everyone is sort of hip to the game now and understands that this is, not somewhere that's just like, oh, we should cheer for the Women's World Cup because that's the right thing to do. It's like, yeah, this is actually a terrible business move if you're not getting in on it, if you're not investing, if you're not putting resources to it, and if you're not tuning in, you're sort of missing out on a massive cultural moment in so many ways. Just in general, the sort of like zoom out picture around women's sports right now feels like we're sort of out of the just like the dogged fight phase. Not that there's not a lot still to fight for.
That was Rapinoe, one of the biggest stars in women's football, speaking about the World Cup and why she expects it to be a seminal moment for women's football. From the inaugural edition in 1991 to now, how has the Women's World Cup grown in your opinion, Dhiman? We know that the Men's World Cup every 4 years is one of the most watched sporting events in the world. You have written in your preview to the tournament that the global audience of 990 million in 2019 is only set to increase this time around.
If what we have seen and read over the past 2 years is anything to go by, it is difficult to dispute Rapinoe. It's difficult to dispute Rapinoe anyway, as a certain American president found out, even as she made America great again. But you see, the popularity of the women's game has exploded. It exploded in England after it hosted the European Championships in 2022. UEFA said that the global audience was 365 million, more than double of what it had for the Euros in 2017. Around 50 million watched the final alone. And that's not all. 91,600 was the official attendance of Barcelona's Champions League home semi-final against Wolfsburg last April. Barcelona are developing this Sergei Bubka-like habit of breaking their own world records when it comes to attendance in the women's game. It was 91,553 when Barca hosted Real, which broke the World Cup's record of 90,185 in 1999 Rose Bowl Pasadena. And there's more. Barcelona paid £400,000 for midfielder Kiera Walsh, making her the most expensive signing in the history of sport. It is one of those instances where Manchester City got a lot of money for a player. In 2020, that figure was £250,000. when Chelsea paid Wolfsburg for the attacking mid Pernille Harder. So a World Cup at this point in time could really, really be a blowout moment, as Rapinoe has said.
We'll hope for that. As far as favourites for the title go, USA are obvious contenders. They are gunning for a third successive World Cup, which even the great Brazilian teams of the past haven't managed in a men's World Cup. Can they build on their aura by winning a fifth World Cup overall?
See, Vivek, with such a reputation, I mean, you've won four of the previous eight editions. It is obvious that they'll go in as favourites. And you know, based on some 1 million simulations, Grace Note, who are the content solution pillar for Nielsen, they have said that there's an 18% chance that USA will win their fifth title, which is the maximum for all teams, for all 32 teams. But here's the thing. The number for twice champions Germany and Sweden is 11%. For France, it's 9%. Australia, Spain and European champions England have an 8% chance of winning. Brazil, 7%, they say. And Canada, 6%. So, yes, watch out for USA, but keep an eye on these countries as well. You know, recently, Zambia beat Germany, and Zambia are among the eight debutants this time around, as are Portugal, but they have seven or eight players with over 100 internationals. And then, you know, what's not to like about Japan, or the last team in 2011 to have beaten USA in a World Cup final? So yes, obviously the USA go in as odds-on favorite, but will they win it just by fetching up? That's possibly not happening.
The US have an interesting mix of players at their disposal. While Rapinoe, who we have already talked about, and Alex Morgan, Rose Lavelle and Crystal Dunn, these players provide them vast experience. I think they also have 14 players in the squad who are playing their first World Cup. Diman, the good old cliche in any sport is that you need a good mix of youth and experience. Do USA have that perfect blend?
See, that is what we'll have to see. Remember, you know, USA, you know, throwing their lot behind experience, managed only bronze in the last Olympics. And bronze for the USA women's team is like not winning anything, almost. So they've learned from that and now they have 14 first-timers. What works in their advantage, I think, is that the culture of women's football, it's so deep, it's so developed. And they have a 12-team National Women's Soccer League. There's stiff competition in college soccer. So even if there are many newcomers, and they are not the only team with that many. Brazil have 11 newcomers going into the World Cup. So even if they have so many newcomers, what the USA will not be lacking is big match temperament, I think. And that is a significant advantage that they can hold over others. I mean, Trinity Rodman is the first player in the USA Women's Soccer League to have a $1 million contract. She hasn't played a World Cup, but she's good enough to be given a $1 million contract. That's something even the Rapinos don't have. So obviously, they have a lot of depth in the squad. Now, having said all that, depth and all that is fine. But when you get to a World Cup, as Michael Holding says in the context of cricket, pace does funny things to batsmen. When you go to a World Cup, funny things happen. So having said all that, because the USA have such a proven reputation, it is difficult to look beyond them as favourites.
There'll also be focus on how Australia fare as hosts. For any tournament to be successful, I guess a good starting point is the host nation doing well. And Diman, as you mentioned in your preview to the World Cup, Australia have never gone past the quarterfinals so far, but they have won 9 of their last 10 games and they'll be eyeing the honour of becoming the first team this century to win a home World Cup.
Yeah, it hasn't happened since 1999 USA. Yeah. So, should that happen, what a moment will be for the Matildas and what a moment for sport, football in Australia, where obviously Australian rules football is possibly way more popular than Australian women's football. But they will take hope from what the men's team did in the 2022 World Cup when somewhat unheralded, they still made the round of 16. And should that happen, should the women's team go deep in the competition, you can rest assured that Melbourne's Fed Square will be packed and, you know, cheering like they did for the men's team in Doha. But while Australia have done well in the run-up, and that's a lot of confidence to take into a competition like the World Cup, and we all know that momentum is a huge thing in sport, let's not forget that they were friendlies. This is the real deal. France did not do very well in the build-up to the men's World Cup, and look where they ended. Yeah. So, yes, Tony Gustafsson's side has recovered from you know, the shock quarterfinal exit of the AFC Women's Asian Cup in India last year and a big loss to Spain. But can they deal with the pressure of expectations? remember that the bulk of the 1.2 million tickets that have been sold for the World Cup have been in Australia.
Well, if Australia are to somehow go all the way, it's a no-brainer that Sam Kerr will have to play a leading role. She is, of course, the leading goal scorer with 63 goals in 121 games, which is almost a goal every two games, which is excellent. Yeah.
And it's 13 more than Tim Cahill.
Yeah.
That makes her Australia's leading goal scorer. And she's also played 13 more internationals than Tim Cahill. And she's only 29. So we could see her for some more time. Now, you know what, Vivek? Kerr is a personal favorite apart from everything. I mean, her incredible ability at headers, her phenomenal goal scoring ratio. But what I also liked about her is that, you know, the way she reached out to the India squad after their Asian Cup was ruined by the COVID-19 outbreak in January 2022.
Hi, girls. Sam Kerr here from the Australian national team. Just wanted to send you guys a message and say how sorry I am for the situation you guys are in right now. I'm so disappointed for you guys. I know you've been working so hard for this tournament. Use this as fuel. Come back stronger. I was looking forward to hopefully playing you guys, but it wasn't to be. Hopefully in the future we'll meet. But good luck in your future endeavours, and hopefully one day we'll see you back in this tournament soon.
I mean, she didn't need to do that. You know, she's a Golden Boot winner in three continents, a star at Chelsea. Emma Hayes, who's possibly the biggest name in women's football, one of the biggest names in football, manager in general, has nothing but good things to say about her. But she still showed that her heart was in the right place, you know. And by talking about the possibility of having the World Cup, this World Cup being another Cathy Freeman moment, she is throwing her lot for the indigenous peoples of Australia, which again is a big deal because there are two players of Aboriginal descent in the Australia women's team, this Australia women's team, and they vote this year to decide whether there should be a separate representation in their parliament for indigenous peoples. Now, in the middle of all this, with this as a backdrop, if Sam Kerr talks about Cathy Freeman, it gives the whole thing a different kind of boost. And I think possibly because of all that, it led to Freeman dropping in on the team.
The power of what of you just being here is like unimaginable. Like, it's beyond your wildest dreams what you're going to be able to do. You're going to be able to get into the blood of everybody who's on the journey with you. It's just a crazy wild ride. And you're writing your names in history, ladies. And you should be really proud of that.
My concern, though, is that Australia are too reliant on Kerr for goals. I mean, Kaya Simon is in the squad, but she's coming off a long layoff from anterior cruciate ligament injury, one of those things that have hit women athletes way more than men. But overall, there are only 7 debutants, and 15 in that squad were part of the last World Cup. So experience is all right, and that's exactly the kind of situation you want when you're hosting a World Cup, when there's so much of pressure on you anyway. And among the people who have played World Cups prior is Claire Polkinghorne, Australia's most capped player, centre-back, with 156 games.
Spain and France, meanwhile, have seen a player's mutiny over the head coach. It led to Herve Renard, who was with Saudi Arabia in the Men's World Cup, taking over the France team from Corinne Diacre, who was in charge from 2017. Diacre said senior players, among them Wendy Renard, possibly the world's best centre-back, had launched a smear campaign against her. Renard is in the World Cup squad. And in Spain, 15 players said they wouldn't play under coach Jorge Wilder. Subsequently, Aitana Bonmati and Mariano Caldente have returned, and Alexia Putellas, who had supported the players but had not withdrawn from the team, have returned. Not quite what you would expect ahead of a World Cup, right?
Yeah, well, not from a top European country, no. And, you know, that's where, you know, they're organized, they look after their players, and things happen very smoothly. So, no, not from a top European country. And that is exactly why Roy Keane being sent home by Mick McCarthy in 2002 after the famous fallout in Saitama is such a big deal. But acrimony in the build-up to World Cups or major football events is almost normal service in many African countries. And this time too, Nigeria and South Africa are the continental champions. Nigeria have been to all finals. They've had issues over payments and coaches hitting out in public. So yes, Vivek, among the many things we can look forward to in the World Cup is also how Spain and France cope with what happened. Renard, as you mentioned, goes to his second World Cup in 6 months. Now, people get to one World Cup in a lifetime, and he's got to two in 6 months. Renard obviously is being banked upon by France to get a quick fix done. He's done it with men's teams in Africa in the past. And he has no experience of coaching the women's team. So it'll all be interesting to see how France take to this challenge. It'll be interesting to see how Aitana Bonmati, who's fallen out, the Barcelona player who's fallen out with her coach, takes to instructions from Vidal. Of course, they've had conversations. Of course, they will try to smooth things out. But that is one of the things I'm also looking forward to in this World Cup.
While the World Cup will hopefully showcase the best of women's football, there are obviously deeper issues that plague the women's game. Diman, as you again highlighted in your article, there is a big disparity in the number of games, for example, that different teams play. There's also a lack of equal pay among men and women in most countries, I guess. Can a successful Women's World Cup help address some of these larger concerns that exist?
Well, I don't know whether they can address them, but they can. I would hope that they trigger conversations. You know, they shine a light on them. You know, like why is it that there's been not enough conversation to see why anterior cruciate ligament injuries happen 8 times more to women athletes than to men? Obviously, because there's not been enough research that has gone into this. So why not use a World Cup to get people talking about this? Why not use a World Cup at a time when the sport is growing, at a time when interest in women's football is growing as much as it has? And, you know, this is not the end. Why not get conversations going? You know, last month there was a survey that showed that 82% of women players in Europe did not find their boots comfortable. Now, these are elite players. They do not have customized boots like the men's, well, the elite men do. So they are supposed to adjust with whatever comes their way. Now, imagine if this is the case for elite players in Europe. Imagine the case in India. Imagine the case where we had a situation last year in the Under-17 World Cup with the boots arriving, you know, on the day of the game for the Indian national team. Now, not all of this is going to change because that rarely, rarely happens overnight. But what better place than a World Cup to start talking about it? And if that happens, then I'm hopeful that going forward, things will only get better.
That was it for this episode. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us on our Twitter handles at Vivek9301 and at DemanHT. If you're a true football fan, you cannot not subscribe to Kickoff, our weekly newsletter on the world game, which hits inboxes every Friday. For more updates on this podcast, follow HT Smartcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And to listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.